So hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel.
I come to you from Bogota, Colombia, where I am recording on land belonging to the Muisca peoples.
Ooh, I love that.
Right?
I'm coming to you from Detroit, Michigan, where I record on land belonging to the Ottawa, Potawatomi, Wyandotte, and Ojibwe nations.
Yeah, so these nations are just some of many still very much out there doing their thing, and we'd like to acknowledge that. This is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. We be drinking and we be swearing.
Heck yes.
So happy 2023, everyone. Woo-hoo. We made it. The last 3 years can eat it.
Truly.
Right? I can't believe it's 2023. It's kind of wild, but new year, new us, y'all. Mm-hmm. And by new us, I mean not us. Instead of us this month, we have some very, very special guests. We have Natalie and Cass are here from Shared History. You know them. You love them. If you know what's good for you, you love them. You've heard their promo like several many times on our podcast. If you don't know anything about them, Shared History is a comedy and history podcast in one, hosted by two badass lady comedians. Each episode focuses on obscure, overlooked, and underrepresented historical events and people. It's more entertaining, more irreverent, and way more inclusive than your dusty old textbooks. Shared History brings you new stories weekly. They're kind of showing off. It's okay. And they bring you new guests roughly bi-weekly. So definitely check them out if you haven't already. Get with the program.
Get with it. I like that there's a threat in there.
Yeah, seriously. They've had enough
time. You gotta keep your friends on edge a little bit. Yeah.
They've had plenty of time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Oh my gosh. So happy to be here. I'm joining you from Iowa, Sauk, Meskwaki, Sioux, Potawatomi, Otto, and Missouri people's land.
And I'm joining you from Ojibwe, Ottawa, and Potawatomi as well.
Ah, I'm totally saying that wrong.
Or I was educated wrong.
I mean, it's more likely that I'm just saying it wrong.
I'm saying it how I heard it in Parks and Recreation, I'm realizing now.
Okay.
So honestly, that doesn't make me feel any better about how I'm saying it. Might not be right.
Amazing. Yeah, we're big fans of your show. We have been guests on Shared History once before, and
we had so much fun.
It was
okay. Can we caveat that? We had so much fun, but so much anger as well.
Yes.
Like, it was really frustrating because you guys are really nice and you brought us a really like topic, which I loved. And I was like, I hope you guys know I'm not mad at you.
Yes.
I'm mad at the subject.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You were right to be mad at the subject, as we are as well.
It was oddly still a very delightful convo. We had.
Yes.
We had ourselves a time.
It's always weird to have a party while discussing something absolutely
Totally. That's kind of our bread and butter on our show.
Yeah,
so we're used
brand.
To those.
Same. Yep.
Yeah.
Just a lot of thank you. I hate this.
Yes.
Yeah. Love you though. Love you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we always have a whole spiel of like, oh, you know, people hate history because it's, you know, it was taught wrong and they hated it during school. And then we're like, I want to tell you about a subject that I fucking hate.
Yes.
These assholes did this thing.
But it's more fun to learn about the stories that you hate. Like,
oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. If there's some kind of emotion behind it, it's going to be way more interesting to learn than like
boredom.
Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
We're reading Things Fall Apart in my high school English class that I'm teaching.
Oh, wow.
And they just don't pay attention. They're sleeping, they're whatever. Aww. And then I came in as a sub and I'm kind of like embarrassing them into paying
just
attention.
Kind of a cool sub.
Yes. I'm the goofy. I'm big camp counselor vibes.
She sits over here.
I don't know if that's cool.
I'm not a regular sub. I'm a cool sub.
I told Natalie, I still have not sat backwards on a chair yet. I don't think I'm doing my job right.
Yeah,
but we finished the book and some kid goes, what? I hate this book. I was like, I love that.
Yes.
That means you're paying attention.
Yes. Yeah, Totally. That's amazing.
That made me happy. Yeah.
I want you to feel something. If it's fuck yeah or fuck no.
That's, yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah. You'll remember it if you feel something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we're going to feel something today.
Yes. I'm very excited about being made to feel something. Before we get into your story, though, I want to kick off the episode with a cocktail, as per usual. Natalie and Cass let me know that their story kind of roughly starts sometime in maybe like the 30s-ish, 30s through 50s-ish. So I did some digging and found, and I really wanted to find a cocktail that was really simple to make. Because with guests and we're not all in the same room, if we were all having a party together in the same room, I would make it as complicated as I could. but making four different people in four different locations make a cocktail, I'm like, no, let's keep it simple. So today we're drinking a cocktail called a Brown Derby. It's made with bourbon, grapefruit juice, and honey. According to Dale DeGroff's 2002 book, The Craft of the Cocktail, the Brown Derby was created at the Vendome Club in LA in the 1930s, and it was named after a popular Hollywood haunt called the Brown Derby. For those who don't know, the Brown Derby was a diner chain in LA that had these like domed buildings that were painted brown and it had like a brim around the bottom. It was made to look like a Brown Derby hat that you would like walk into and eat lunch. The Hollywood location was super famous in the 30s and was always packed with tons of celebrities and Hollywood producers and actors. Cecil B. DeMille actually owned a location at one point. I think the Hollywood location. Clark Gable was frequenting the Brown Derby. Marlena Dietrich made a big stink one day because she walked into the Brown Derby wearing pants. Yes.
That Marlene.
I know.
Disrespectful.
I know. Spencer Tracy used to go. And the Brown Derby was even featured in Mildred Pierce in 1945. And yeah, that's such a good movie.
Oh my God. The outfits.
Oh my God. And in an episode of I Love Lucy in 1955. So while the recipe for the Brown Derby cocktail appeared in the book Hollywood Cocktails in 1933, there's a boozy little scandal about the origins of this drink, because an identical cocktail called the De Rigueur was published in England's Savoy Cocktail Book in 1930. So there's no way to be 100% certain that the Brown Derby was completely just like ripped off from the De Rigueur, or if maybe they were just independently invented, you know, by two different people at the same time. This was before the internet, so it's possible that the person who invented the Brown Derby didn't know about the De Rigueur. The recipe is really simple. It's kind of similar to a classic daiquiri, but with bourbon instead of rum, grapefruit juice instead of lime juice, and honey syrup instead of simple syrup. So if grapefruit juice was having a moment at that time in history, it's entirely possible that two different people decided to make a twist on a daiquiri with grapefruit juice and whiskey. But also, the Savoy Cocktail Book was like super famous at the time. So popular bartenders would have had a copy of it. So it was probably just ripped off from the De Rigueur. But either way, the Brown Derby became way, way, way more famous and more popular than the De Rigueur ever did. And it doesn't really matter anyways. Who cares? Because it's good. Yeah. And it's strong. And it's really easy to make. All you do is shake together bourbon, grapefruit juice, and honey syrup. A bartender and cocktail authority named Jeffrey Morgenthaler said, honey is this weird ingredient that can tie flavors together when you need it to. And by some miracle, it sits in this perfect place between bourbon and grapefruit. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah. So let's take a little taste.
Yeah.
A little cheers.
When I was a kid at school, learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
Dangerously delicious.
Yeah.
Shit, that is fresh.
Yeah, it's like there's a little bit of bitterness from the grapefruit juice, but like it's bright, it's fresh.
It's balanced perfectly with the honey.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I think this cocktail is like a who's who of like Natalie's favorite ingredients. Like, give me a citrus, but like give me a fancy citrus. So give me a grapefruit.
Yeah,
put honey in everything. Half the time, I'll sub a honey syrup for a simple syrup.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah,
and bourbon all day, baby.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like a almost like a grapefruit whiskey sour.
Yeah, a little bit.
Ooh, yeah. Either way, I'm a fan. I was nervous because I do not like grapefruit. But okay. I love an adventure and I love a task.
So yeah.
Like, hell yeah, I'm going to make it. All right. Holy shit, it's good.
It's so good.
It's kind of like grapefruit is seemingly a perfect balance with bourbon because it's got that sharpness and sweetness as well.
Totally. Yeah. A cocktail with its own built-in scandal is definitely the way.
Well, a lot of the cocktails have scandals because people be drinking and lying.
True. That is true.
And if people be lying, it's usually because
exactly.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I swear, you guys, I made it up. I never even had it before.
I just created this cocktail out of nothing. Ignore the copy of the Savoy cocktail.
I know.
Book.
Don't look over there. Over there is lies.
I was like pleasantly surprised given our topic that you didn't do a rum drink because I felt like it was kind of asking for a more traditional daiquiri.
The
girl's not a big rum girl.
Okay. I was actually thinking about doing, given I know a little bit about what you're going to be talking about today, just because I needed to know something to make the cocktail.
I know nothing.
I almost did a banana daiquiri. But I hate bananas.
Yeah. Same.
Do you really, Cass?
I mean, I hate them in like cocktails and like canned, like banana flavored things. Mm. I love bananas.
Oh,
I don't
mind
it in a smoothie, but like, I don't know, like a banana daiquiri or like banana Laffy Taffy. Worse than Laffy Taffy.
I actually agree. I don't like banana flavored anything. Like, no, thank you.
Natalie has a fun fact about banana flavoring.
I love banana Laffy Taffy.
Ew.
I like banana runts. Yeah. My theory, the runts?
Yes. Natalie. Natalie's a known sociopath.
So. Have some self-respect.
My working theory, my adult aware brain, my working theory is that I'm the youngest child in my family and I just learned to love the flavors that I was given.
No one else wanted them.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah,
that's probably real.
Bars and like almond joys since I was like way too young to probably be into coconut. So
I also loved Heath bars and almond joys as a kid.
Just a little old lady.
What? Yeah, that's like old lady candy.
I
was pleasantly surprised that you didn't pick a banana drink, but I almost put a little like slice of banana on the rim just because it so doesn't belong with this drink.
Totally.
And someone in our story totally doesn't belong in the other part of the story.
Okay.
She's in you.
Well, segue for me, Cass.
Yes.
I'll be up there, Matt.
So to explain why we won't shut up about bananas, Cass and I would like to talk to you about banana republics and
the beige wear.
Yeah.
No, beige
great
wear.
Pants.
Not the overpriced Gap wear.
Not the Werner Herzog adventure wear.
Yeah. Oh, I love Werner Herzog.
Have you heard of beige sad beige baby or
yes.
whatever?
No.
Oh, yes. It's like Werner Herzog has a baby clothing line. Or something.
Stop it.
I think it's fake, right?
Is it fake?
I
don't know.
He has a very weird sense of humor.
Okay. Well,
I think it's just like a meme.
It's just pictures of the babies. Because there's a woman who's like, welcome to Werner Herzog's baby, sad beige baby outfits. And then it's just pictures of like really like blue steel model babies in a lot of like earth tones. I figured it was fake, but I didn't know if maybe he had, I don't know.
I wouldn't put it past him.
I mean, it's possible, but it felt like a joke to me.
Well, I knew the voice was, but
yeah.
Anyway,
so before we get into the weeds of the fuckery of the United States government here, as one does on Beyond Reproach, a quick context lesson of like what a banana republic is. For our listeners, a banana republic is a politically unstable country with an economy dependent on the exportation of a limited resource product. It's called a banana republic because that's the term that O. Henry, speaking of candy bars, that's the term that the author O. Henry used in his book Cabbages and Kings, which I think is like a 1901 or 1904 or something novel. In that book, he's describing a fictional Republic of Anchuria, but it is essentially fictional equivalent to Honduras, because he's describing Honduras and its neighboring countries being exploited by United States corporations.
What?
I don't buy it.
I just snatched all of my pearls. I can't.
We would never.
Stephanie has no pearls left to clutch.
The U.S. government and capitalism? Never.
We must have different sources because I have a wildly different story. I don't know what account I was on.
It's called Banana Republics in O. Henry's book because the limited resource that the nations are being ravaged for are, you guessed it, bananas. Mm-hmm. Bananas were introduced to the United States in the late 1800s, also known as the 1800s.
Yeah, I love
that. I love that.
And we go bananas for bananas. They're exciting. They're exotic. They're less expensive than a lot of locally grown fruit. Hmm. But they're only grown in specific climates. And none of those climates are in the United States. Mm-hmm. So by the late 19th century, we have three American corporations dominating the banana market. We got a banana monopoly. Those companies are Cuyamel Fruit Company, Standard Fruit Company, which we might also refer to as the Vaccaro brothers throughout this story. So I'm just letting you know they're the same thing.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go ahead and call these guys the biggest bad, the United Fruit Company.
Yeah.
Okay.
You thought she was going to say United States, didn't you?
Both can be true.
Both could be true, yes.
If something's united, I don't trust
it. It's terrible.
I mean, it's usually united in a bad way.
Uh-huh. Prove me wrong.
So the long and the short of kind of setting the stage is these companies are bringing bananas up to America. They're making bank. They're using that money to buy up more land, more formerly family-owned farms and plantations. Then they're making more money, buying more land, and then using that money and land and power to gain more money, land, and power. You know, the American way.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes.
To put it into context, by 1900, the United Fruit Company controlled 42% of the land in Guatemala. In like
what?
Guatemala. Holy shit.
Yes. They also managed the country's postal service.
What?
And all of these companies kind of helped like build ports and train lines, yeah, to get the bananas to America.
Sure.
So there's an infrastructure monopoly here, not mm-hmm. just a fruit monopoly here. Gaining all of that power and having all that power means, you know, lots of bribing of the local government and influencing and leveraging the might of the United States government.
Uh-huh.
So Cass and I are going to talk about three specific events in three different countries that are all banana fuckery that the United States is involved in.
There's a reason I hate bananas.
And you know what? This is why we've decided maybe it's okay that the banana that... Oh, Cass, was my fun fact that you know that I love to tell is the fact that
yes.
the artificial banana flavor is based on a flavor of a banana that no longer exists. The flavor that artificial banana is based on, the actual species of banana, is extinct, that flavor comes from. So if you taste something artificially banana flavored and you say that doesn't taste like a banana I've ever had, you're probably right.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Banana doesn't exist.
As a food history nerd, I actually knew that one already. And I guessed what your fun fact was when you started talking about runts.
I thought my fun fact was just that I like runts.
No, I wouldn't call that fun, Natalie. I want to introduce you to a man named Samuel Zemuray, nicknamed Sam the Banana Man.
Nope. I hate him already.
Nope. No, thank you.
So fun, though.
Who knew that such a silly fruit could be so deadly and, you know, horribly, horribly depressing? And, you know, this horrible, horrible man named Sam the Banana Man, it's just... No. It's confusing. It's off-putting.
You know what's more off-putting? The fact that Sam the Banana Man was 6'3". I don't know why that upsets me so much. It does upset me.
And I didn't know that, but Natalie always looks up how long people are.
It's That's amazing.
So, Sam Zemuray is an American businessman. He has an entire Wikipedia section just called Honduran Coup.
Oh, no.
So not like a super great guy.
No.
His number one credit is Honduran Coup.
Some of his best work. So Zemuray discovered bananas for the first time for himself, not in general. Mm-hmm. In the late 1800s, like 1890s, bananas were, they were new, they were exotic, they were different, they were cheap. But the trouble with bananas is they ripen very quickly. So it's like, as soon as we pick them off the tree, gotta get them there. How many times have we bought a bunch of bananas and then we have a bunch of old gross bananas?
How many bananas are in my freezer that I have earmarked for banana bread because they've burned too quickly?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how and have never made banana bread. And my girlfriend's always like, I mean, I know it's easy, but like when you freeze them, do you take the peels off? Because they're hard to take off when they're frozen.
Yeah, you peel them first.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, my girlfriend's always like, let's just keep them, make banana bread. I was like, none of us is going to make banana bread. Come on.
You can thaw them out and then peel them, right?
You can do that as well. I always just peel them first and then.
But they're kind of mushy after.
Can you guys just let me have this? Can you just like, no, Cass, it's way too hard. Yes. You'll never be able to crack it.
Yeah.
You're right in giving up.
It's impossible.
Kids, remember in life, sometimes you just got to give up, okay? Mm-hmm. That's what my mom always told me. No, she didn't. She's a lovely woman. Because bananas ripen so quickly, he moved down to Mobile, Alabama, and he started kind of building the market there. He would get bananas in, he would sell them on the train to people so that they could sell them quick before they went bad. He made a lot of money doing this. I read somewhere where he started like $150 when he started and then amassed that up to $100,000. By the time he was 21, which
21.
In
21, wow,
yeah.
Which when did he start? How old was he when he started?
I don't know how old he was when he started. He was born in Natalie. You ready to do my math? He was born in 1877, and he started banana-ing in like 1893. Playground. So not long.
He's 16.
He was 16. Oh, wow. Oh yeah.
He's a banana teen. He is not a man.
No.
Sam the banana team. Banana boy.
Sam the banana boy.
We love it. We love it. Yeah. So he just kind of his little side hustle. And then he kind of blew it up. The big coup, the big dealio, was he built this empire in Honduras. He started selling for, he didn't create the company, but he started selling for the Cuyamel Fruit Company, and they were doing great, and they were giving a bunch of government kickbacks because they were bringing a lot of money, maybe not to Honduras, but to the Honduras government. Mm-hmm. Honduras also owed the United Kingdom a lot of money. They were kind of in debt for them, and they ousted their president.
They, the banana company?
No, sorry, Honduras. Manuel Bonilla was the president, and he got ousted. We don't like Manuel. Not a great guy, but he was the guy kicking all the bananas back, giving those banana kickbacks. Where the United States come into this is that the Secretary of State, Philander C. Knox, which the name Philander just sounds like philanderer to me.
You know he's not a good guy.
No, probably not. He was kind of in charge of dealing with Honduras and Great Britain and getting this money back to Great Britain. And so he's involved in a lot of the government stuff, a lot of this financial stuff. And Banana Boy, he's Banana Man at this point, excuse me, Sam. He's like, hey, philanderer, can you help me out? Can you like, can we square away? You guys took away the president. I super like, can you just fix something in here for me so I still get all that monies? And philanderer says, nah, I'm not going to help you out. Don't get involved in Honduras. Okay. He doesn't do anything to stop it. His involvement is, we don't know how much he knew or how much he didn't know. So it was very much a sin of omission, but still like he knew something bad was going to go down.
100%.
100%. Yeah. So Banana Man, he's like, I'm just a banana guy. I'm just a businessman. Maybe
he's like, come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Maybe what I could do is I could start an insurrection and coup in Honduras to get my president back.
What?
Because that's what you do, right? You don't find, you know, this whole like business takeover and business is war. It's like he did it to a country. So
this is very Hawaii.
Very Hawaii.
Totally.
Yeah, story. Yeah.
So he, in order to, it's just so ridiculous because it's for bananas, right? Like,
I mean, Hawaii was pineapples.
Was pineapples, yeah.
Bananas are just such a goofy fruit, though. Like, I mean, I get it. I get the commodity of it. What I'm saying is something that is thrown at Mario's cart, slip on it and fall out. Like, it's just such a silly fruit. Mm-hmm. But boy, is it the prettiest girl at the dance, because everyone is fighting for it. So he starts a coup. They reinstate Manuel Bonilla as the president, and lots of bloodshed and gore, all of that.
Oh my God.
Yes. Not good.
No, not good.
Yeah,
so we've got this like, we've got this super fruit. Everyone's going bananas for bananas. Natalie already took that joke. And this, you know, young upstanding kids, I'm going to make some of myself. I'm going to make some money with bananas, and then jump to, I'm going to destabilize an entire country. What?
No big deal.
It's just like a natural progression for a business plan.
Just, and he's named Sam the Banana Man. Like, it's all just so goofy to me, and it's so horribly depressing. And you've got to have like a scary bad guy name, right? Or it's like blood diamonds, you know? But these are blood bananas.
Blood bananas. I never trusted him.
No. Yeah, you said it from the start.
You did. Yeah.
Like Cass said, this is like an instance of like the United States getting blood on their hands by just choosing not to help and not to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in truth, like, the United States is directly profiting from all of these connections.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're talking about Honduras, but in Guatemala at the time, 72% of all exports went straight to the United States.
Oh, my God.
And Guatemala received 65% of its imports from the United States. So
what?
The investment of the United States is very motivated to keep the bananas under its boot.
Yeah.
You got to keep getting those sweet, sweet bananas.
There's always money in the banana stand. But we're learning. So that's like what, like 1910-ish? Cast?
That happened in 1910 through 1911. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The coup ended around, Bonilla was inaugurated again in 1912.
Done.
Okay. Wow.
And shocker, sorry, I didn't mention this, so you guys probably didn't know. Once Bonilla was reinstated, Zamure got a lot of tax breaks and land concessions for Cayamel Fruit Company.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah. I should have mentioned that, because that does not go without saying.
No, no one would ever have guessed that at all.
That's just a really weird coincidence.
Shocking.
Probably did a lot for the people.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And with like all of the infrastructure that they were building out, except no.
Yeah.
Spoilers, not at all. So the fruit companies move on. Like, it's not just Honduras, it's all the neighboring countries until basically all of Central America is built out this way of the fruit companies coming in and laying their own telegraph cables so that now they own the communications in the country. They own the trains in the country, et cetera. And of course, the only people profiting off of this are the corporations and the heads of state, anyone with a vested interest in bananas. The model of the banana republics was challenged the most forcefully by labor organizers. Yay, unions!
Yes. Yes.
Yay! So that brings me to 1928, Colombia.
Yes, thank you. I'm excited for this.
Bringing it to you, Stephanie. The workers are the ones who are taking the most strong opposition to the banana companies and the only ones taking action. Everything else is a lot of people just kind of saying patriotic things, but not doing anything because they can't put their money where their mouth is when they're getting money for the bananas. Because part of the problem here isn't that in Colombia specifically, for what I'm about to talk about, the fruit companies are not abiding. They're not respecting the local laws. So there are labor laws set in Colombia that these fruit companies, that United Fruit Company in this situation is just like, no, that doesn't apply to us because we're not a Colombian company. So the workers are being paid absolute garbage. They're being paid often in like coupons that they can only use at company stores.
Oh my God.
That racket that we all know.
It's Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, they're being paid in tokens. Uh-huh. And then you get tickets, and you think that you have enough tickets for the big stuff, but you only have enough tickets for a slap bracelet, and that's
it. You never have enough for the big prize. You never have enough
tickets to feed your family.
No. The big prize is healthcare. They're just like, you get a slap bracelet.
Slap bracelet for you. That cuts your arm.
And you can't go to the hospital.
So October,
you spend all your tickets on the slap bracelet.
So October 5th, 1928, the delegates for Colombia's banana workers in Magdalena gather to discuss their concerns, which are long hours and shit pay. And they agree to strike. And the next day, so October 6th, they issue the United Fruit Company a list of 9 demands. Here are their incredibly demanding demands.
Oh, dear.
Stop the practice of hiring through subcontractors. Mandatory collective insurance, compensation for work accidents, hygienic dormitories, and 6-day work weeks. 6-day work weeks.
Wow.
Increase in daily pay for workers who earn less than 100 pesos per month, a weekly wage, an abolition of the office stores. No more slap bracelets.
Mm-hmm.
abolition of payment through coupons rather than money.
That's trash.
Of hospital services.
Wow.
What was the last one again?
Improvement of hospital services.
Okay.
So they're like, if anything could be clean, if we could not be worked to the bone, and then also if we get hurt, we can do something about it, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you workers weren't so selfish.
I mean,
don't they know? I'm out here doing the work. I'm planning coups. I am insurrecting things. I'm spending my millions on fun things. Clean your own fucking bathroom.
Literally. And fucking Susan in Iowa can't pay more than 15 cents for each banana.
How is Susan going to make her banana bread?
Seriously, think of poor Susan.
Fucking Susan.
Wait, so this is 1928. I do want to think of Susan because in 1928, as a side fact, United Fruit Company had set up an education department which supplied United States schools with teaching kits extolling the benefits of bananas and like banana recipes. So like full on,
of course,
full on banana propaganda.
Yeah, marketing. Banana propaganda.
I the worst kind of propaganda.
You know what? We're going to take a stand. That's the worst. Mark Zuckerberg is fine. And
no,
wrong. Bananas.
Pure evil.
Yeah. So October 6th, the strike breaks out, and the strike turns into the largest labor movement ever witnessed in Colombia until then. So it's like a groundbreaking event. It goes on for like 2 months with no settlement, no signs of a potential settlement on the horizon. The workers are actually really well organized. They are not caving to the threats of the soldiers, who are like, there's an anecdote where the soldiers are like, who's in charge? And the workers are like, bitch, we're all in charge. Like, mm-hmm. are the leadership. It was run very democratically.
Yeah, Colombia is very, very revolutionary. Like, they have such a long history of it. And it's incredible. Like, the banks last year had to reinforce their windows because they were being attacked. People were breaking the windows of banks because they're like, you guys have too much money and we don't like it.
I love it.
Yeah.
Please give us any of it.
They're trying to eat the rich over here. Yes.
You know, and what? We're all saying it and they're doing it.
They're doing it.
They're doing the work.
I was in, God, this is going to sound like a bougie-ass sentence. I was in Paris for Christmas in like 2018, 2017. I don't remember. And it was at the time that there was a lot of protests and all of the banks' windows were boarded up, and all of the, my favorite was like on the Champs-Élysées, all of the luxury stores had their windows boarded up. Mm. And we would run into tourists who were like concierges who'd be like, well, and just, you know, be careful because like there's some violence in the streets. And we're like, we're on their side.
Yeah, we don't know, the violence. Seriously. Yeah.
Like, they're fine. They're not targeting me. They're targeting the fucking Louis Vuitton store. Mm. So
yeah.
Also eat the rich. So the strikers are trying to eat the rich, and they're really testing the United Fruit Company's ability to continue to control this whole territory through just like their corporations and mercenaries backed by the military and, of course, the United States. So there's still no settlement. And then finally, the Colombian president at the time, Miguel Abadía Méndez, he issues an official declaration of a state of siege in what is called the banana zone.
Which stop it. No.
Speaking of Chuck E. Cheese, let's all go to the
banana zone.
The banana zone?
It sounds so much more fun than it is.
I mean, it's giving me Discovery Zone.
Right?
Yes. I can't like unhear banana zone is just so
That's
silly.
That's why all of this is so upsetting, because without any context, this would sound like the loveliest story.
Really?
If I were to give you cliff notes, I'm like, all right, we're going to the Banana Republic. My buddy Sam the Banana Nam is coming. Banana Man. We're going to chill in the banana zone. And there will be runts there. Yeah. And blood and turmoil and discord.
Because speaking of blood and turmoil and discord, by declaring siege on the banana zone, he is telling the mercenaries that they can open fire, and the soldiers they open fire and they massacre, and we're going to say an unknown amount of workers. Mm-hmm. Sources vary greatly. One source says that 9 bodies lay in the streets.
Just that's real cute.
One for each of the demands.
Yes. Oh,
Jesus. Another source says 47. That one doesn't have any fun correlation to it. And other reports say up to 1,000. The report that says up to 1,000 is a telegram from the U.S. Embassy to the United States Secretary of State that says, quote, I have the honor to report that Bogota representative of the United Fruit Company told me yesterday that the total number of strikers killed by the Colombian military exceeded 1,000. So I have the honor to report this.
Good job, Charlie.
Jesus Christ. I'm inclined to believe the report where they're telling on themselves.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, when they're excited about it.
Yeah.
Because normally if you get a big number and a little number, you kind of split the difference. Mm. But when the one number is 9 and the other is 1,000, I'm moving closer to 1,000 in my estimate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What does this have to do with the United States government being the fucking worst? Don't worry. The Colombian government only sent their army in, which, by the way, none of which were locals. They couldn't use any of their local soldiers because they were like, they're not gonna. They only sent the army in because the United States government, in another telegram, basically threatened to invade Colombia if the Colombian government didn't attack.
The consulate
to the U.S. Secretary of State had basically said, like, hey, this is a quote. It is doubtful if we can depend on the Colombian government for protection. May I respectfully suggest that my request for the presence within calling distance of an American warship be granted and that it stand off subject to my call.
Wow. That's so respectful of him.
Yeah. Can I respectfully request a warship just like on standby?
No big deal. That's it's giving Panama that we've done a story about Panama.
Definitely.
Oh my God.
Definitely. Well,
and if they had said no and the United States invaded, what would the story have been in America? This horrible coup where American freedom and we're just giving everyone the freedom and we're helping and we're going to say freedom 5 times. And like, can you imagine the story they'd spin now if that actually had happened?
These Colombians are just so fucking selfish. They want Susan to pay more than 15 cents a banana.
Not Susan.
After all this banana propaganda.
Very protective of our banana rights. Oh my
God. They are trying to take your bananas from you, Americans.
These are my inalienable banana rights.
Banana rights, banana zones.
I'm glad that you asked what the story would have been if they had invaded, because the United Fruit Company had been messaging the United States claiming communism.
I was just about to say it's communism.
It's 1928, baby.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. That's my bad, guys. That was so easy. Come on.
Seriously.
That was a lob. We're in the 50s. It's obviously communism.
Yes, the damn Reds.
Yep. So they were saying the strikers were communists. Mm-hmm. So that's what we were just helping out. We were just helping out.
But I mean, good on the U.S. government for striking down the scourge of communism.
And are there communists in Colombia anymore? Probably a lot.
More now than there were then.
Probably.
It's very, very, very socialist here. It's wonderful. But that's communism. Like, that was like the buzzword. You could say that and just do whatever because they were the boogeyman, like the king of the boogeymans.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
It really,
I just start doing that to like coworkers I don't like. Be like,
communist.
Outing them.
I heard that they were a communist.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In America, people hate the word socialism more than communism now.
Which doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, keep in mind, no one knows what either is.
Exactly.
What the difference is between the two.
I know that Obama is one. I've been told that. So that is the one I dislike.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia is red. And red has something to do with one of the isms. Mm-hmm. Arr, I hate them.
Yes.
America.
We will bring bring in more communism in our third and final event that we want to talk about after this break.
And it looks like we're live here.
I'm one of your hosts, Hamish.
And I'm your other host, Aaron Conway.
And welcome to our show,
The Third Wheel.
And today we're joined by...
Hello everyone, I'm Anna Blackburn.
I'm Josh.
My name's James.
Yes, I'm Nish.
My name's Sneja.
I'm Gina.
Hi everyone.
I'm Lil.
This is Jakeshri.
I'm Tam.
Hi, I'm Deja.
I'm Nicole.
I'm Ashley.
My name's Dar.
I'm Shami.
That's just a few of our previous guests. Every episode we're joined by a Third Wheel to hear their story, debate some juicy topics, and play some games. You can find us everywhere at thirdwheel.fm and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at The Third Wheel FM.
Like, jumping on this podcast, The Third Wheel. Like, I love being The Third Wheel right now. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah, we're back from break. We're back in the banana zone.
Welcome to the banana zone.
Step in. We're heading to 1944. Banana Zone 1944. It's the title of my new post-apocalyptic series.
And to throw in more banana terminology, all of these things that we're talking about, these conflicts, these coups, they're collectively known as the banana wars.
Stop it.
Okay.
I won't. Stephanie, I won't stop.
This is too much. Like just everything is bananas. I get that everything's bananas, but wow, like everything is bananas.
Everything is bananas.
Literally everything is bananas.
Yeah. Like, I would say, like, let's work on our marketing, but they don't need to. Like, bananas sell themselves.
Yeah. Well, who needs marketing when you've got propaganda?
Banana propaganda, no less.
Yes. That part.
You might say that
what is propaganda if not militarized marketing?
Uh-huh.
What is banana propaganda if not appealing?
Natalie, get out of here. Natalie has to leave.
I'm upset there haven't been more puns, honestly.
I like the Nixon peace sign.
Yes. Well, that was our show. Thanks for listening.
No, we have to ravish another country. We have one more country to ravage.
And that war is undone.
Yes, the banana wars have to spread to Guatemala. So we have the Guatemalan Revolution is what we want to talk about next, aka the October Revolution. I'm saying this starts in 1944. We're covering a lot of time with this one because it's shenanigans. It's bananigans.
That one I'll give you.
I guess you balance out my strong objection.
Tuck says yes. Stephanie says no. Sounds like we've got a scandal.
I mean, I hate puns, but I also kind of love puns. Like I hate that I love puns.
Yeah.
And every time I laugh at a pun, I'm like, this is a failure, a personal failure.
You die inside a little bit.
But that's little
the
bit.
Beauty of a pun. You know, like a really, really like bad groaner and everyone's like, oh, that's such a bad pun. But that's kind of the point. Like
that's
a bad dad joke is kind of the highest honor. A bad dad joke is actually a really good dad joke.
Yeah, that's the whole point. So
just embrace the groan.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I play for groans. That's what I play
for.
I play for groans and eye rolls.
Boy, and the eye rolls don't give her as much, you know, noise as like an applause. Mm-hmm. But if they did, it would be a roaring ovation of eye rolls.
At one point, we talked about having our old audio editor, Tim, have like a sound effect for an eye roll. Because there's so many of them on our show that we have to constantly reference them. Because it's an audio platform and you can't hear my eyes rolling.
Oh, and there's nothing worse than like an eye roll and you don't point it out to the audience. And then they're like, wow, that was kind of a dickish response. Yeah. Like you're just not even gonna say anything.
I can't talk. My eyes have rolled so hard.
Oh no, I lost my contact. All right, Natalie, roll our eyes.
Yes.
Always cast tag in on this one as you see fit. We divided up the other revolutions, but this one we thought we could share.
I will, but I feel like I'm gonna like blank out because I'm just thinking of puns right now. But I'll do my best, Nat.
Fair, that's fair. So the October Revolution demonstrates what some call Guatemala's first true election. Juan José Arévalo is appointed. The country stabilizes a little bit. We let the banana zone catch their breath. A few years later, Arévalo's democratically appointed successor, Jacobo Arbenz, takes control. And he seems cool. Everything's kind of cool in Guatemala. Arbenz is genuinely dedicated to the betterment of his country, which is the bare minimum that we should we want from a leader.
A democratically elected leader.
Right?
just, you know, the want to not suck. He wants to redistribute unused land to poor land farmers.
That sounds like communism.
I was about to say.
But it would lessen the country's dependence on the United Fruit.
Oh,
which
no, we can't have
that's this. No good. That's no good.
This is sounding more and more like communism with every word.
So the United Fruit Company turns to their sizable lobbying power in the United States government. By this point, the other two companies aren't as, they don't have as strong of a foothold as United Fruit Company is. That's why I said at the beginning that they're the big bad, is that they just keep absorbing more and more land. And like more.
Yes. Yeah. Can I interrupt to ask, where is Chiquita in this whole?
So Chiquita doesn't exist yet, and neither does Dole.
Okay.
But they exist without existing.
Dole was doing stuff in Hawaii a long time ago, so they might not exist in bananas yet.
They don't exist in bananas yet. So the Vaccaro brothers that I mentioned earlier, they become the Standard Fruit Company. And then in 1991, the Standard Fruit Company merges with Dole. Okay. So Dole Food Company and the Standard Fruit Company.
There's like a whole wing of Colombia's like Museo Nacional about United Fruit Company.
Yes, wow. United Fruit
Company. I have a lot of like photos that I'm going to add to this episode that are really good.
Yes. So you're wondering where Chiquita is. Chiquita's right in front of you. It's been Chiquita coming the whole time.
Yes.
The Chiquita is coming from inside the house.
Totally. Yes.
The company is bought and rebranded as Chiquita.
That's. I had a feeling that that was going to be the case, that it was United Fruit Company the whole time.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Oh my God. We'll make that a meme.
Their lobbying power in the United States government is insane. They've had congressmen and senators criticizing Guatemala for ages for not protecting the banana interest. They've had this going on for years already. They have like a smear PR campaign discrediting the Guatemalan government already in the works, already rolling. So they just got to like focus more attention on it. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is that they commission a 235-page report criticizing the Guatemalan government. Historians have called this report full of exaggerations, scurrilous descriptions, and bizarre historical theories.
That's so long. How many 200 and what pages?
235.
Come on, you guys.
It's too many pages.
Get it together. They're doing that shit on purpose. TLDR. They don't want people to read it.
Yeah, exactly.
And most of it's probably fluff. Because I'm just like, these guys, they suck and... Here's why.
Communism.
You like wrote like dirty words in the middle of it because no one's going to read it. Let's do it. Yeah.
It's like lorem ipsum in the middle. It's just like a placeholder text.
Communism. Lorem ipsum. Communism.
Yes.
That's all it is. Banana, banana, banana.
All work and no bananas.
All work and no play makes Sam the banana man. Also, I haven't heard a lorem ipsum reference in a while. That's beautiful.
You're welcome.
Of the other tactics that the United States government takes in this, they refuse to sell arms to the Guatemalan government during this initial revolution. They also block weapon purchases from other countries. They essentially spend $500,000 convincing both lawmakers and the public that the Guatemalan government needs to be overthrown. Mm-hmm. Not that it should be. It needs to.
It has to be.
They think there needs to be a banana split. I've been holding on to that one, and I think I forced it a little bit.
I love it.
Thank you.
Stephanie is...
Your bar is so low for me.
All puns are good puns in my mind.
Yes, I think that was a great pun.
It was a good pun.
Really reached. You could have gone for much lower hanging fruit.
You're right. What an idiot. Yellow.
Oh, they just write themselves.
Yep.
This is a pun
one
run.
Super cool. One of the super cool tactics that the lobbyists took was implying, you guessed it, that the government of Guatemala is communist.
Communist, yes.
Right? Nobody saw that one coming.
No one sees it coming.
Central America is officially changing the uniform color of communism from red to yellow. Yes. Yellow means communism now.
Yes, red leather.
Yellow. You're in the Republic now.
Yes. They were basically implying that our bands won the election by granting known communists in Guatemala the right to vote. Was part of
it. Oh my God, yes. Voter fraud, everyone. Don't you know? Voter fraud.
Dead communists.
Yes. Oh, but it turns out you won. Yes. Oh, sorry, there was no fraud then. I'm just kidding. There's no fraud.
Yeah, I know. JK, LOL.
I feel like I need to say this, but it upsets me that I need to say this. The Guatemalan government at this time, not communist.
Mm.
It's not. But the United States
sucks.
we were wrong. Turns out we made the whole thing up.
It was all a dream.
But you know, it's the 1950s. It's early Cold War days.
Yeah, that's the time.
It really doesn't take much to convince people that somebody is a communist. And also, given like the location, the United States perceived them to be a possible like beachhead for Soviet domination in our hemisphere. So,
because this is the time when like Cuba is doing its thing, and it's like, oh, they're all communists if they don't let us steal their land and profit from their resources. So
selfish.
Yeah. Related. When Arbenz is eventually overthrown in 1954, spoilers, Che Guevara happens to be in Guatemala at that time. So, bananas.
I hate you. Shit is BNA.
That was really good, but like also I hate you.
Again, hating someone, the sign of a truly good pun.
Yes. Uh-huh. The fact that my first impulse was like roaring laughter and then hatred.
Immediate rage.
So what's going on during this time is that so the banana companies are like, hey, U.S. government, we should do something about this. They really need us to, we need to liberate Guatemala from their own democratically elected government, you know, like you do. And then Truman is convinced because somebody says communism. Because
he's a piece of shit.
Yes. And so Truman starts planning a covert CIA mission to overthrow the title of this operation is Operation PB Fortune, which I hate and I don't understand.
PB, like the letters? PB?
Yeah, like just capital P, capital B, Fortune, one word.
It's because peanut butter and bananas go so well together.
I was just going to say peanut butter. Like,
oh, maybe.
So every time you guys eat a peanut butter banana sandwich... You're enforcing this and you're showing that you are okay with it.
You hate Guatemala.
You hate Guatemala if you eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Or a banana smoothie with peanut butter in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an act of aggression against Guatemala. Why?
Honestly, it sounds like eating bananas at all is going to be an act of aggression against all of Central America.
Yes. The classic CIA mission is to not actually be involved in any way, but just like give manpower and money to a different power, basically the dictator
support.
Of Nicaragua. Yes, yes. The dictator of Nicaragua at the time was supported by the United States because we love dictators, and he basically
for as much as we love democracy, we love supporting dictators more.
Absolutely,
love it.
We do. We love it a lot more.
Nicaragua was like, give me guns and I'll overthrow Guatemala. And Truman was like, yeah, okay.
Okay, sounds good.
He starts drooling. Oh my God, yes.
Say less. miraculously, his Secretary of State discovers the plan and the State Department like shuts it down. Like he talks
really
down.
Really? And
he's like, wow.
Yeah, because his Secretary of State was not a philanderer.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
was his Secretary of State a Dulles? Because cut to Dwight Eisenhower taking the presidency, and his Secretary of State and his CIA director are the Dulles bros, and they have very close ties to United Fruit Company. Mm. So the plan's back on, baby. But we renamed it, but it still involves peanut butter. Now it's Operation Peanut Butter Success.
Ooh.
No, it's not. Is it really?
PB success.
PB success.
Oh my God.
the naming conventions.
This is country. Yeah.
I feel country. Like there's got to be an announcement with a mission accomplished sign behind it. Like a very George W. moment.
But with like jars of Jif on the...
What if Eisenhower like had a press conference announcing the success of a covert CIA?
Oh my God, that would be hysterical.
It does feel very, very W.
That's very W, yeah.
I did it, y'all.
I saved bananas.
It can't be fooled again.
God, oh, the greatest American quote of all time. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice.
Can't be fooled again.
So good that The Who wrote a song about it.
It took me like a split second.
That was on the way home. That was a ride homer.
I didn't get that one.
I didn't either. I'm laughing like I did though. I want to be cool.
I want to be cool. Peer pressure.
I want to be accepted into the banana zone.
If you want to think about The Who, you need to watch more CSI Miami. It's the only way.
If that's the way, then I can't do it.
Yeah, honestly, I won't. I'm fine. Stephanie, you and I will be cool and not
I was just a hippie in high school. I've never seen CSI Miami.
I actually think it might be a different CSI, different Who song is the theme. Okay. So I might be wrong.
Anyway, what was the success?
Of Peanut Butter Success.
Peanut Butter Success... I mean, it's going to be successful because they had a $2.7 million budget for, quote, psychological warfare and political action.
Oh, my God.
No. The total budget was probably $5 to $7 million. They used over 100 agents.
This is 1950s, right? This is like, that's a lot of money.
They have a hit list of who to assassinate. They're delegating very nicely now to the dictators that they work with. They get the Guatemalan official, Carlos Castillo Armas, to lead the opposition, and congratulations, the United States starts a bloody revolution. And if we're adding to just the scandal and scandalousness and United States government fuckery, not only did the United States fund this covert mission, Guatemala made an appeal to the United Nations about during this, and the U.S. vetoed an investigation into the incident.
Oh my God.
Stating that it was an internal matter in Guatemala. And it's like, if it's an internal matter, maybe butt the fuck out, U.S.
What? Yeah, what is that?
Why are you in it? Response? Why are you telling us about this internal...
Because we are in charge of protecting the world, okay, you guys? The United States is in charge of protecting the world, so we need to be there. We're not doing anything bad. We're just babysitting, I swear.
We're just protecting our financial interests.
Democracy.
Democracy.
Anti-communism. What?
Mr. Peanut Butter and Mr. Banana Man.
Mr. Peanut and Mr. Banana Man walk into a bar.
I was going to say, there's got to be some... I bet you know Mr. Peanut knows about all of this.
Oh, yes. Mr. Peanut knows everything.
There's some connection between United Fruit and Mr. Peanut. He's got a cane and a monocle and a hat. Like, he knows shit.
Oh, he is the rich. Absolutely. We are actively eating him.
That's why I eat so many peanuts. I'm not supporting him. I'm trying to eat him.
It is canon that thanks to the Super Bowl commercial, that Mr. Peanut is immortal because he could just plant himself and regrow himself as a baby peanut.
Oh, my God.
Oh, shit. That's a metaphor for something bad.
Yeah,
so something bad. Can I ask... I don't know if you know what, like, how did the UN respond to all of this? Like, how is it that the US can say, like, Guatemala is telling the entire UN that we're the bad guy, and we can stand up and just be like, hey.
Guatemala was asking for, like, the UN to play interference at all. I don't think that they knew the US was involved. Because Arbenz had also directly reached out to Eisenhower for aid, like completely unaware that Eisenhower was partially behind the attack.
So they didn't, I get it. Okay.
They
so
went they just in general for help, and the United States used their power and influence in the UN to quash the
This has happened before. Like, Cuba went to the UN as well and said, like, hey, the US is surveilling us and like doing all these weird like psyops. And the US is like, I don't know, really?
Yeah.
Prove it. Yeah. Like, these are covert ops for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it sounds like in this case, Guatemala didn't know that. No,
the person that... they chose somebody who had a decent enough like following and had some influence to lead the opposition in Guatemala. And so it was more of Guatemala being like, hey, can you like help us out of this sticky revolution coup situation that we might be in? And the US was like, that seems like a you problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Nobody look into this.
Yeah.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yes. No, don't look.
Honestly, the log line for the United States should be pay no attention to the man behind the
literally.
Coup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's usually us.
Yes.
And also just to bring it to America's favorite topic of oil very briefly with just a fun fact. A CIA plane in Guatemala bombed Guatemala City's government oil reserves as well.
That is such a fun fact.
Just a fun fact.
Yeah. Natalie's full of those. You know? They either make you groan or cry. So fun.
So fun. Over the next 40 years stemming from this revolution, over 200,000 people in Guatemala alone were killed in attacks. There were in government crackdowns and in civil wars that broke out across Latin America. 83% of all the victims across Latin America were ethnic Mayans.
Yeah.
And as recently as March 2007, Chiquita Brands, which we know is a United Fruit company, did at least plead guilty to charges of funding known terrorist groups like the Defense Forces in Colombia, for example. So...
Damn.
So Chiquita at least sort of took partial responsibility for one.
Well, Colombia has all the receipts. They're not over this, nor should they be.
Nor should they be, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yep. United Fruit Company also, like, their dealings in Cuba, since you mentioned Cuba, were significant in the rise of Castro and the Cuban Revolution of the late 50s. So,
yeah.
United Fruit had a hand in the Bay of Pigs invasion in 61.
Yeah, they did.
And you know, like, if you want to look at any bad dictators in Central America, South America, Middle East, all of them are reactionary.
Yeah.
They're in response to exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. You can say, you know, Osama bin Laden was a bad guy. Yeah, he was. Like, he was a bad guy. All these people may have been bad guys, done bad things, bad intentions, but they're bred out of land being exploited, their own people being criminalized, all of these horrible things put upon them by colonizers, white supremacy, hundreds and hundreds of years. So
absolutely.
While I'll never say that some of these dictators were like, oh, they're great, whatever. A lot of these countries were dealt with.
They are products of their environment.
Yeah.
But also.
No, they're not products of their environment. We are not in their environment. We came into we invaded. We are a safe species. Yes.
Yes.
No, yeah.
But they are the products of like foreign interference.
An adulterated environment.
They grew up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I was teasing.
A natural environment.
Yeah.
But like us in their environment, they are the product of that.
But also a lot of times these dictators are also bred by U.S. money, like Noriega in Nicaragua, Osama bin Laden.
The Americas.
Yeah.
Everyone loves to bitch about Iran or Iraq. Who gave them the guns?
Exactly.
Yeah.
We didn't.
And who trained them?
Who trained them?
Yeah.
You know, our way of saying, oh, we don't involve ourselves in the military. No, you give people guns, weapons, money, resources to fight other people.
Yeah.
And then they use those to fight us because we fuck shit up to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you weren't on the ground doesn't mean you didn't put all those guns out there.
Yeah.
I didn't mention this, but I feel like we just haven't talked about Sam the Banana Man in a minute.
I'm sorry. Thank you for bringing him back.
He has been baked into Sam the Banana Bread.
Yes.
And been eaten.
He is the cream of this banana cream pie.
Yes.
I say that United Fruit Company is the big bad, but I do want to mention that at the beginning of the Guatemalan Revolution, at like the beginning of the United Fruit Company being like, hey, CIA, what if we fucked around and the Guatemalans found out? At this point, Cuyamel had been bought out by United Fruit Company. So Zamuri retires when Cuyamel is bought out by United Fruit Company. But then because Cooer's gonna coup, later the hostile takeover of United Fruit Company. So at this point in time, he is the president of the United Fruit Company. So it all comes back to the banana man.
No.
Yeah, he's not the president. He's not the president by the time that Arbenz is overthrown. But like when they're doing this 235 page report and everything, he is the president of the United Fruit Company.
Jesus.
Or sounds.
The banana man cometh.
Yes. And this is-
Enter banana man.
He used to be such a sweet banana boy.
Oh, whatever happened to that banana boy?
That sweet banana boy who almost spoiled bananas.
Yes, he turned into a rotten banana man. Oh,
also, I want to think that like 16-year-old Sam was just grinding and trying to sell his bananas, and there was some guy that's making fun of look at Sam the banana man. Uh-huh. And he's like, you know what? You think that name's dumb? Just wait. I'll make some of it.
So like at some point they also call him the banana king. So at some point, banana man. Yes. Man was not enough. Mm-hmm.
Well, we know he's not a communist at least.
Yes.
He's full-blown monarchy.
Mm-hmm. Banana monarchy.
Yes. And he has a lot of... He
doesn't have the right ring.
He's got a lot of ideas and plantains.
Nope.
I didn't love it at first, but I think it's jealousy. I think I was jealous.
The more that Stephanie needed it, the more I liked it.
Yes.
Stephanie, you know you only fueled her fire, right?
I like that one.
Plantains are such a like such a part of like my cultural heritage that I actually, even though my faith said no, my heart said yes.
But you know why? You know why it's okay? It's because plantain is such a less goofy word than banana. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right? Because if you said like Sam the plantain man, like that seems kind of like, I don't know if I trust him.
Yeah.
He's maybe a little evil, but you hear Sam the banana man, you're like, okay, all right, Sam.
Yeah.
Okay. Banana is just such a goofy word.
Yeah. I only knew instantly I didn't like Sam the banana man because there were context clues. I knew.
I mean, you knew we were talking about a scandal.
Yes.
That we came to this podcast to talk about.
Yes. Yeah. He's not a good guy. No. It's not going to end well.
Yeah.
For Guatemala or Colombia.
Or Honduras. Yeah. I'm really upset. I've been trying to think of a potassium pun and I've been having
Matt,
a hard time.
Don't worry. It's okay.
That's all I could think of. To do a periodic table.
You guys are smarter than me. Could probably extend this another 15, 20 minutes just to see how many puns we could squeeze out of this. But I think, Nat, that's like all of our facts, but I'm willing to do the extra work. I am. Can you just like keep all this dead air in there while we think silently
of more banana puns? And
hold on, it's almost there.
Peanut butter puns.
I may be a lesbian, but I love a big dickery. That was
you
too
could
much
use banana.
But I love to say like on a patio, I love a big dick. Just a great deck.
I actually have a t-shirt that I bought. Stephanie and I have this, like, one of our favorite Instagram accounts. It's called Middle Class Fancy.
Oh, my God. Me too. Do you follow Rad Dad?
It's incredible.
It's so good.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
But so I bought a t-shirt for Middle Class Fancy that it's literally a picture of a deck and it says Big Deck Energy.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Because if you follow that account at all, anytime they have any meme post, whatever, they follow it with like four slides of
yes.
all their different
shirts.
I
definitely bought the Big Deck Energy.
Oh my God.
I t-shirt.
Did you ever find your sleek? Your
I do. Yes, I did. Yeah. Okay. I have a silly goose on the loose sweatshirt.
Okay. Well, if you're a fan of Middle Class Fancy, you got to follow Rad Dad. It's similar.
Okay.
Amazing. I think it might be the same account.
It probably is. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Sorry to bring it back to Susan from Iowa.
Susan. Yes.
You know, Susan has big deck energy.
Uh-huh.
I feel like this could go on for ages because, you know, puns and memes.
I feel like
the end.
I feel like Dev would hate us. Our audio editor, Dev, would probably hate us. But after we end this recording, we might just hang out and make puns for another
I think we might
hour.
Have to. Yeah.
We might have to stop recording and then re-record and just release just pun bonus.
So I'm going to close the show now.
Yes.
Yes.
We have to have a mini-sode next week, so maybe it'll just be us making puns.
Release the pun cut.
Yes. Give the people raw, what they want.
Raw and pun cut.
Amazing. I'm sorry, Dad.
That was amazing. Actually.
I'm sorry, Dad.
You did it.
I'm sorry, Tux and Stephanie.
Don't be.
Don't be. Yeah, it was worth it for that. Yeah.
Yes.
It was all worth it. But our drinks, or at least my drink, is empty.
I'm going to take my last sip right now.
All of my delicious whiskey and grapefruit juice and honey are gone. So yeah, our drinks are empty. So I guess we're done. America's history is juicy. We just add whiskey, honey, and a little bit of grapefruit. So yeah, thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel. And
Natalie Younger.
And Cass Maher.
Woohoo!
Amazing. Thank you both for being here. This was so fun.
This was also so fun. And
so fun.
Horrible.
Yeah. Yes. We're just paying you back for your guest episode.
This shit was, you've said it already, but the shit was bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A audio editor, Dev. We could not do this without him. And we're sorry for all the puns.
Speak for yourself. I'm not sorry for any of it.
I'm sorry for your conflicting feelings about
I'm happy we started another American Scandal.
Yes. the great pun wars of 2023.
This is the pun zone.
Yes.
Y'all, it's bananas. Cut me off, Cass's
microphone just fell over because of puns. I think that's a sign that we have to wrap it up. We have to say goodbye.
Yeah,
thanks for listening. Bye.
Yeah, bye y'all. Thank you for listening to Beyond Reproach. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media. And make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We also have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.